orthopedic surgeon. Well, I just made this comment, I know.
There is an online participant in the phone number ending in 3229. Can you state your name for the record, please?
Commissioner Boyce.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The life and death service went on the right out, and they're paying for it. So, and I, that came to me, and I had to say that, just to get it out there, because that's just bullshit.
I got the opportunity to go aboard.
Do you need a shoulder done?
Alaska Trojan yesterday up in Reedsport, the King Crabbers of Alaska. And.
I can't think of his name.
The amount of bycatch that the drivers are getting, especially how.
I'll think of it. But anyway, Clevenger's the guy you want to see.
Okay.
Where's Tanner? Denard is the one on the shoulder.
Okay, we're going to bring this meeting to order Thursday, June 11th, 2020, at 2 p.m. Can I get a roll call, Danielle, please?
Karen, here. Joe?
Yeah.
Ken?
Yes.
Richard?
Here.
Roy?
Yes. Are there any modifications, additions, and/or changes to the agenda as written?
I would like to add information item A to the agenda.
Information A?
Yeah, information item A, RV park seawall. RV park seawall.
Hi, it's Martha here. Just letting you know I'm on.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay, can I get a motion to amend the agenda to add information item A, RV seawall report from Gary?
I make a motion to approve the agenda, including the addition of information item A, the RV park seawall.
Second. Joe Spear's second. Roll call, Danielle?
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes.
Roy?
Yes. For the board, do we have any declaration of potential conflict of interest of this agenda or this meeting?
No.
No.
Okay, can I get a, you don't need a motion for that. Can I get an approval of the agenda as amended?
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda as written with the addition of information item A.
Thank you, Ken. Can I get a second?
Second.
Richard, second. Danielle, roll call, please.
Sharon? Yes. Joe?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes.
Roy?
Yes. Do we have any public comments? I see no form filled out before the board today.
I do have one that came in by Court Commissioner Court Boyce.
Okay. Commissioner Boyce, are you online?
Thank you. Yes, I won't be too long. Just want to give the board a report. Yesterday, we had a 45-minute conversation with Congressman DeFazio. It was Douglas County Commissioner Tim Freeman, Coos County Commissioner Melissa Cribbins, Josephine County Commissioner Lily Morgan, and myself. We had one from Lane County, and also, but she did not ask a question. And then AOC Executive Director Gina Nickel. So what came out of that meeting, of course, the fire awareness, and I'm very confident that Congressman DeFazio and his staff are becoming more and more aware of the Brookings Harbor watershed and what that means to the amount of aggregate that comes down the river there, past, present, and future. And so it was just a very good conversation. And as you probably know, one of his primary projects throughout his district is to improve to the locations that he can and help on the wastewater treatment facilities. And so, we're just pushing. I'm encouraging him and his staff to make the port of Brookings Harbor one of the top priorities. And some of you met with him last August. He's coming again this August, and I'm going to be basically pushing for him to come to Brookings again. So when it relates to your strategic plan, I think there's some good things happening there, and just it's going to take some time, but it's surely worth the pursuit. So that's really all I have for today. And if you have any questions, I'm certainly available.
Court, thank you very much for that report. Thank you for your time, and thanks for all the hard work that you're doing in your position, Court. We appreciate you. Any other comments to Court from the board?
Thank you.
Gary, anything for Court?
Nope, thank you.
Okay, Court, thank you for that. We're going to move on, and look forward to hearing from you again soon.
Thank you all very much for your service.
Yep. Very welcome, Court. Thank you. So, no further public comments, Danielle?
No.
Moving on to action items, numero four. Alphabet A, Curry County 36-inch storm drain easement. I think we have a Curry County representative here today. Thanks for coming.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here. The Board of Commissioners, Bruce Christensen, Curry County Roadmaster. Anyways, I've been working a couple of years with Gary and Travis on survey projects and follow up to our meeting that we had between our two boards, you and the Curry County Board of Commissioners. And so I've been trying to put together projects. And what I'm trying to do is I have a really good feeling that there's going to be a chance for several ready projects to get funded. So I moved forward with the engineering for the 36-inch storm drain project. And so, and what the thought is that if I could get funding, I might get it for 10 cents on the dollar. And road department will pay for the project. And but the idea would be that the port would give free easements to the county, that the new portion of the storm improvements would belong to the county, and there'd be enough room for us to maintain them. And so what we would like to do is across the road, Lower Harbor Road, put a large inlet structure with a bar screen to keep big rocks and debris from coming and entering the pipe that crosses your property. And then where the port was working, mucking out the pipe last summer, we went and saw a large sedimentation basin, basically 16 feet long, 8 feet wide, with a 4-foot sump in it. And so we would want an easement dedicated to the county for that structure, but also in that easement, we'd want an easement for our equipment for performing that work. And so we need to have a 10-wheel dump truck parked along the wall, and our rubber tire excavator be able to come in there and muck it out, put it in the dump truck, and we would treat it like we do now with the one on Tuttle Creek, where Travis will call it, hey, Rich, that thing needs to be mucked out, we'll go muck it out. And
thanks for coming, Chris.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know. It was brutal. So that's what we'd be looking at for that structure. So if I could not find, or I can't find funding for it, I'd put it on the shelf, but I'd also put it into a facility plan. And I'd like to talk about that facility plan as well, is that there's a outdated facility plan that City of Brookings and Curry County did for the Harbor Hills in the Brookings Bench. And I reached out to Brookings last year, and they didn't ask me back, but what I'm really looking at is I really want to update the county portion, but I think it'd be really smart or a good thing that if the port would sister on that with Curry County, because there's a lot of storm drain deficiencies you have on your property, but also too is there's a lot of issues in the port. And I don't know all the port issues, but you know, with sedimentation going in the basins, and there might be some permitting that you have to have, like 1200 cc stormwater permits. I'm not sure all the things that you may have, but in this document would help us secure funding. So this is a document that would be adopted by the Curry County Board of Commissioners and your board as well, and become a living document. So that way, when we apply for grant applications, we take the information from this document, help support our grant, and it raises our scores. And so that's the second thing I'd like to do. And that I would like to try to that facility plan, I'd like to get going on it this fall, where it'll be completed this winter. And so that plan was just for the county portion, like $96,000. I have that in my budget, but I'm thinking there might be something in the report, and I don't know what that number would be, because I don't know what the items you have that would be in a plan like that. So if you would know and you can give me that information, I could probably get her attached to what that would cost for the, to have that engineered into our plan. So then there's another project I would like to get shovel ready that I haven't reached out to the board yet other than my emails, Commissioner Pass. And that is, now looking on your map here, there's a storm drain that comes from Shopping Center Avenue off of the hill, cross country through your property here, and then back into the county culvert, and then into your private culvert, going out to the boat launch area, into 18 inch. And so what I'd like to do is engineer a below ground culvert with manhole structures, and that if you would consider giving free easements for that, where we would own it. But also, I was looking as part of this project, there's a swamp year round on Lower Harbor Road right there, and that's not good for the county road. The water in a road base is what makes the road go bad, or a parking lot, or whatever. And so, what, on a storm drain project, what we want to engineer is a secondary underground storm drain system that would be a French drain with perforated pipe encapsulating gravel that would be attached to it. And so, no longer would any debris coming from your property into the storm drain system that would be going into the port. So I think that we can stop a lot of that debris that's landed in this outfall here if we did that. So that particular project, I want to try to make shovel ready, but even if I can't find money, I'd be looking for our forces, the road department, as well within the wheelhouse of our skills to install that. So right now I have Dyer, or the county engineer, Dyer, putting together a task order for me for permits, for also for easement documents, and for engineering the structures. So I have those three things going right now that I'm trying to get done this summer, if I can be able to get down. So, and then overall, well, we were doing a mapping project a year and a half ago, and we were DEQ. I don't know if y'all heard, DEQ caught the road department, and there's dirt that got in the port. We were fined by DEQ, an egregious violation. So we fought that case really hard. We ended up losing. I feel really off with DEQ because we're a big champion of DEQ and always have been, and they said some things that were very untrue. And but they won. We could have kept fighting it, but it would have been an uphill battle, so we decided to pay the fine. And it was reduced to $1,000, but still, it's the principle of the thing having an egregious violation against the road department for a first-time offense. It was still, in the scheme of things, it was such a minor thing. But anyways, when doing that, and trying investigating, and then we were actually investigating for DEQ at the time too, because there was a big oil spill, but I won't get into all that. But we found a lot of other deficiencies with the storm drains crossing port property. Like there's two that are deficient underneath Lower Harbor Road, coming from Fat Irish Group, and they kind of cut across here, and they're in really bad shape. And so I'd like to try to find funding for those and try to get, if we can get funding for those, get easements from you, and get them in county ownership. Because if I get them in county ownership, I have the equipment and staffing that can maintain those, where you really don't. But the county isn't going to take on storm drains that are deficient. and it's cost, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to replace, but the thought is that we get them in these facility plans, that we'll be able to find money and get them paid for cost effectively. And working together, and your board and our board put letters of commitment or letters of support to, and we build a nice grant package and we work together on these projects. And these are just a couple. There's so many more around here, like Tunnel Creek. We have sedimentation. Travis called, hey, Rich, go muck that thing out. Go muck it out. There really needs to be a second one because, you know, these storm events are so big. We've had three, like, 50-year storm events since I've been here for 15 years. And that sedimentation at Tunnel Creek will just fill up in one big storm event, and then that storm event will keep on happening, and it'll fill that 86-inch line going all the way into your where you haul your boats out, and you're getting all kinds of sediment in there. So there really needs to be another sedimentation basin in there that get it into county ownership. Actually, we already own it. Adelie's been in there. But then where 4M Tackle is, or used to be with Marge, that storm drain that the port put in, they put it in with the invert at the bottom of the pipe like 2 feet higher than the county pipe. So our pipe's a big sediment trap. And then the port pipes were connected. Our pipe is a plywood vault. It's not even a concrete structure. There's this metal lid on there, and it's horrible. And it's so there's so many deficiencies that I know about, but there's probably so much more I don't know about that's on your property and issues. And so I really want to try to get together and try to do a joint facility plan of Port and Harbor Hills County facilities for more facility plan to help us find money. And so, you know, that's what I'm trying to do. So I guess my real question is conceptually, are you, like the port manager and the harbor master, are thinking why the county would free easements for these storm drains and try to get them in the county ownership after the new improvements are installed?
Any comments?
Well, you described three or four projects, right?
Yes.
So is there a priority list, and do we need to address that first, or address the whole thing as one, give you permission and Gary permission to address all of them, however it works out?
Like, I'm taking on like the two easiest projects first.
Okay.
And that's what I'm trying to develop right now. And I'm just trying to make them happen without a facility plan. But I think what we really need to do is have that facility plan where we have that conversation and decide the priority of all these deficiencies. You know, because you have a lot of say in what's causing you the most pain in the port. And so I think there's so many, you know, I could think of like six, right? So, but we'd work together in that facility plan, and, you know, this facility plan would go under port review, or you would look at it, and you'd have to really work hard to make sure that you put good information in there. You know, because it's garbage in, garbage out, or it's good information in, you know, good information out, and make a living, working document, and not have it just on a shelf, and make it usable. And so it makes me crazy. I knew this plan existed because I helped make this plan back in 2005 when I worked at the City of Brookings, 2006. And I had a crazy amount of projects in there, deficiencies, storm drains for City of Brookings. You know what? We got a lot of that done. I started working for an accountant, and there's all these storm drain deficiencies, and these things are historic. They've been going on for years. And I go to the county, and go, hey, I want to get a copy of that plan. What plan? Nobody in the county even saw it or heard of it or knew it. It was like, so I get a copy of the plan from City of Brookings. They're on my copy, and I read, because I'm trying to see if any of these deficiencies I'm just talking about are in that plan. They're not even the plan. The plan says everything's going good down here. So it's pretty much no effort was made at all in that plan. So garbage in, garbage out. So what I'm trying to do is make a real plan that has real information that we can go chase money with. So that's what I'm kind of talking about.
So I have one more question. You're talking about the county acquiring ownership of the
versus an easement?
Easement. No, you still own the property.
Okay.
And
misunderstood what you said earlier, then.
They own the line, right?
Well, like, some of these projects, if you had time after this meeting, I could stay till this meeting's done, we could walk these, so you could actually, so I could, you know, we could talk about it and describe what they are. What these would be, it'd still be your property. What I'm looking at is kind of mirror what the city of Brookings would do, is once the infrastructure is brought up to a county standard, that I would reach out to the Board of Commissioners, Curry County Board of Commissioners, to accept an easement from you, and then it would become county-owned infrastructure. But it'd still be on your property. But we would have the right to go in there and fix it, repair it, and say 50 years from now there was something broke, we have the right to go in there and fix it. And so that's what we're looking at. And so what I'm looking at is the road department, you know, from that meeting we had last year with our boards, we wanted to make a working relationship. And so my thing is these maintenance items are well within the road department's wheelhouse once they're brought up to a certain standard where we can maintain them.
So I just want to kind of bring, you know, the problems, I guess, that we're having since we're talking about them. You know, our 36-inch culvert in particular here, we've only got 80 feet of it cleaned out underneath the road, which would be the county section. But the port section, the part that they're, you know, they're willing to take over, we're talking $100,000 to replace that pipe. I don't think huge money. And that's the one thing I think it's a great idea to work with the county. The problem that we're going to run into and that you guys need to be aware of is that the upgrades that we need to make to get it to where they can take them over, hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, these are long, long lines that are completely deteriorated and gone. So to replace those and get them to a point where they can take them over, we don't have the funding to do that.
But am I understanding the roadmaster is saying that he's after funding? Is that
that's
on
correct.
Port property? Is that going to apply to port property?
Well, that's what I'd be looking at. And so I would be looking at, say it is a $100,000 project, and we were able to, and we had this facility plan to support it, and we were all working together. It's possible we could do that project for $10,000.
On the port property side.
Bucks. On the port side.
Correct.
You know, and so I think that, you know, that's a more reasonable number. And it's a number that we could do some cost sharing, and a part of that cost sharing is there's a value to that easement to the county, okay? And so that's what I'm kind of looking at. And, you know, like right now, there's a lot of pressure on the road fund, okay? And so what I'm trying to do is utilize the road fund the best I can for the road department and to try to get some infrastructure repaired and replaced. And so, and you know, we want to have a good working relationship with the port, and so I'm thinking, and our commissioners want things to happen, so I'm trying to make them happen.
We appreciate that. One question I have is, so that property across the street is port-owned property, and it is for sale.
Mm-hmm.
So the easement, if given, which I'm all for the easements, my question is, would that easement have any bearing negative on the sale of that property?
Yes. In the sense that no one could ever build on that easement. You could put a parking lot, you could landscape, a driveway, but you couldn't put a permittable structure.
Over top of that easement.
But
to the left and right, north and south of that easement,
yes.
You could build anything you wanted to.
Yes.
Correct. I don't have a problem with that at all.
And you think about that, if you're trying to develop that, and we put this structure in with that underground drainage system, it's going to dry up that swamp out there. That's going to even make that more constructible for you. You know, so it's a benefit to our road, so it doesn't fall apart, but it's also a benefit to you that now you have a dry piece of ground. You don't have a swamp.
Well, I, for one, I'm all for the easements. I have no problem with the county easements.
On your cost sharing, what do you have a percentage
in mind? Well, what I was really looking on this 36-inch storm drain would be just the easement. On the 18-inch storm drain where the swamp is, I was looking just for the easement. because I'm they're going to be based on if I could even find the money.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Except for the 18-inch storm drain, I think my team can accomplish that project in a couple of weeks, maybe 3 weeks max, this fall, late summer. Plus, I already bought all the stuff. It's in my yard. So.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
So not being really familiar with easements and how they're handed out or given or awarded, are there, it would have to be surveyed, right, Ken? There'll be some kind of surveying going on there to?
I would take care of all of that.
You would take care of, but what is the procedure?
The procedure would be that I would have Dyer, the engineer, our engineering firm, they're also a surveyor, our county surveyor. They would survey the property. They would draft up a easement, a written document. Well, we have our standard written document. It's the front ends that has all the language, but they'd make the back end showing the drawing so you could see what it is in relation to the existing structures and roads or, you know. And those would go together. Those would be given to you as a board where you'd have to have the board sign off on them, all of you. If it's like the county, it's all the commissioners. And it'd have to be notarized. And then I would take it, you'd submit it back to me, and I would put it on the agenda for our Board of Commissioners, and they'd have to agree to accept it. And then they'd all have to sign it. And then once it's, you know, filed and everything, it's a done deal. So it's a pretty easy process.
It has to be recorded.
It has to be recorded and attaches to our deed.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
it
gets attached to our. Yeah, we send it to the recorder's office. You're right.
With the 18-inch line that you're talking about. Were you done?
Yes.
I didn't get there.
Okay.
On your 18-inch project line, remember that line is not that. Most of it is not on our property.
What?
After the road.
Right, where it crosses the road. Right here.
That's right. Here. Oh, this doesn't belong in the forest.
Our section is only right here.
Yeah.
So that, just to keep it that.
Because what's on the tree side.
Yeah. I'm not looking to take over lines or anything, but I think that line's having plenty of problems. I understand there's been some flooding in the past. We're getting blocked up. That's in bad condition. But there's also all the dirt and everything that's coming off your property that's landed into this area. I think there's a hump of dirt in there.
That's not the one that line is
the bad one over here.
Yeah,
right?
That's the bad one. The one that you're talking about, the 18-inch one, there's not a deposit really that comes from that. And the only flooding that occurs there is when the 36-inch one by our office floods up and overflows because then it floods through our parking lot. So it floods up here on this side, and then it floods right through the road through our parking lot, and that's how it floods it. I mean, it's an absolute 25, 30-foot wide river that runs through there.
It's not really. So this one here doesn't really benefit you other than it dries up your property.
Right.
And maybe it benefits your little piece here, but it doesn't sound like it's causing a whole lot of problems for you. And so, but the 36-inch one that we're talking about with the big sedimentation basin, that one there, it really needs to be cleaned out. And I wasn't really looking at, just to clarify what Travis was saying, I wasn't looking like from the sedimentation basin out to the port, I'm not looking at taking that over. Our engineer determined that pipe was in fair conditions. It's in decent shape, just for what they could see from both ends. That is sized for like a 100-year storm event. So it's a good pipe in good condition. I could see where in between that vault and these buildings, you have a manhole structure that's not a manhole. It's just a piece of pipe sticking with a grain on it. And it's horrible access. And it really needs to be a manhole. I would suggest that get upgraded. You know, we could maybe make that part of that project where they install a manhole there, because once there's a real manhole, there's a place now you can clean from. Because right now, once it gets past that sedimentation basin that we're talking about, there's nowhere to clean it from because it's all rolling downhill. And that way, once it's past the sedimentation basin, it's hard to pull stuff back uphill. And so, but, you know, we're looking at, another thing I was, you know, we had talked, I didn't maybe didn't mention was, we'd be looking at when we're doing the BMPs for stormwater, is that the port would maybe put a silt fence outside that outlet, you know, as far as when we're doing stuff so we can do the construction, because I believe you bought those materials, and that's kind of more your expertise to set that up, and that'd be kind of like written into the permit for, yeah. So, I mean, there'd be a little bit more commitment from the port, too, with the sedimentation, solving the sedimentation fences.
You're looking for comments still?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I would just comment that, first of all, is there any mention of any of these improvements in our strategic plan?
No.
So that's not a good backup document to help funding?
No, it wouldn't be.
Can we amend that, Gary? Can we amend that, Richard? If Richard thinks that would help, is that amendable?
I'm just asking.
I don't know if it'd be helpful or not, but if it's in a facility plan, then that's helpful. So it may be just more paperwork in our strategic plan. You know, I wouldn't double up. I would just use his.
Use the facility planning?
Yeah. Like to have it in one place or other. I think we're good.
You know, this is how I try to do it. It's like right now we're doing our rough draft review of roads facility plan. Travis mentioned to me last year, hey, that we'd like to get sidewalks in front of our offices and bike lanes and, you know, wrap our whole area where your county roads are with sidewalks. And I said, okay. So I'll put that in my roads facility plan. But I'm also putting, you know, this vault and storm drainage, and that the storm drainage needs to be installed in a way that's conducive for those improvements. You know, so I try to like get where my projects kind of come together in a different plan. So it could be, and plans need to be updated every 5 to 8 years. I know it's a big cost, but things change, you get more information, and projects get completed, hopefully, and you need to keep updating your plans. And so, So I try to get, so like for this area here, I'm going to have a roads facility plan. And it's going to talk about these other improvements I'm trying to get done for you, because there's money out there for public improvements. And I really think that there's going to be a lot of cheap money out there, you know, with all the problems we've been having trying to put people, country back to work, you know. So I think I'm just trying to get everything going, so I'm ready to start, you know, get things 10 cents on the dollar, and maybe we can make things happen for both of us.
In general, I'm pretty excited about doing something about drainage.
I am too, Richard.
It's a problem. It's an ongoing problem. You know, without knowing all the details about easements, I'd have to hear from Martha about that. That doesn't sound to me at this point like a real deal breaker of any kind. That makes sense. Depending on what all is involved. So conceptually, I think it's a great idea to
100%.
Get involved with this. Makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think we've always felt kind of uncomfortable about having to accept whatever came downhill, because we don't have much choice. Water runs downhill and we get it, whatever's in it, and we have to dispose of it. So having a concept that ties that together with the upstream portion makes sense.
Very much so. And glad to have a roadmaster that's willing to put in time and work it out for us.
Well, I think in order to address a lot of these issues, you can't just look at the culvert once it gets to the port. You got to start looking up above all the discharge points, and there's maybe something up there that needs to be addressed as well.
Correct.
That's beyond our purview, but the county certainly can deal with that. So I think this makes sense to kind of marry that together with our side of the street, if you will, and
absolutely
kind of treat it as one system instead of two pieces.
To follow up on that, you know, I'm trying to make really stronger relationships with the planning department and the building department, because they issue these permits up on the hills. And I've actually invited Gary and Travis to planning commission meetings so they could comment on who's trying to build a subdivision up there, knowing that the water's coming to you. You know what I mean? So you know what the heck's going on. So the thing is that that's how these things, you know, we're trying to build all these relationships where we're all working together on the same page.
That's great. So I'm going to start with Joe. Joe, do you have any concerns with easements? Ken, do you have any concern with easements?
No, I think it's an excellent opportunity, and thank you very much for coming to us.
Richard, do you have any?
I don't have concerns with easements. I would just comment that completely separate from this. Mm-hmm. With the ongoing issues that are occurring on killer whales and salmon production and all those kind of things, at the federal level, there's a lot of discussion about this very thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to be looking at all the stressors out there that are affecting fish and fish mm-hmm. habitat, and that includes a lot of upstream
Absolutely.
Type of issues. So by doing this, we're going to be at least ahead of that game. I don't know where all that's going. I know that NOAA has now asserted themselves into projects that are occurring in the water and over the water in central fish habitat issues areas like we have here. So this is more than just coincidentally timely.
It's tough. For instance, I'm going to the board next week to help let me buy a $43,000 pipe. An arch pipe, you know, I have a FEMA project at a culvert, right, a 60-inch culvert, and I wanted to repair for like $40,000, and then, you know, FEMA, you know, meet out there and everything, oh, yeah, this is a good project and everything, and, well, just upstream of it, they did a fish pipe, you know, so, okay, we got a fish passage, will help make this project happen, so, and then turned into a $290,000 project for 96-inch fish pipe. Now it's turned into a $500,000 project with a 19-foot diameter half pipe on foundations, 9.5 feet tall for this little podunk stream in the middle of nowhere. And not only that, DEQ jumped on top and said, well, you're ripping out some asphalt. Well, that new asphalt you're putting there is toxic. We're going to have to treat that asphalt. You know, so I mean, these projects just go crazy. So I don't want to do any more FEMA projects, but if we can get like state money that we're allowed to manage it, a lot of these guidelines, this craziness goes away. A lot of these folks, they do everything by the book. And
we're finding that out.
Yeah. No, and there's no balance at all. Money's not an issue.
Sharon, are there any concerns with you on county easements?
No, I think it's important that they have the easement to maintain their area, and I think it benefits the port to
absolutely
to go along with this too and partner with them.
So the board being polled, Mr. Roadmaster, I don't think our board has any concerns of these easements. I think you'll have no problem with that with Travis and Gary, and I think that the point you're trying to get across with what you've said today so far is, are we or do we have any concerns with easements? And I think the answer is clearly no.
Awesome.
Well,
qualified.
The
concept of easement is great. Now, realizing that we have to bring it up to standard before the county can accept it is a different issue.
Correct. That's two separate issues. Easements and bringing up to
the concept of an easement is fine.
Right.
Well, if we can find the money where it's really not super high cost, I think it's going to be a win-win situation for both of us.
And I think the port doesn't have, we don't have an out not to do this. I mean, we're either going to either partner with the county, do it ourselves, or partner with FEMA or whoever. But if we don't get it done, DEQ is going to put a hurt on our bank account and our operations.
Well, and again, it doesn't make any sense to build a Ford for us and a Chevy for him.
No. Well,
if we're going to do it, it's got to be a homogeneous type project.
Absolutely.
I have a question. So on the easements, they don't all have to be done at once, right?
Oh, no. And I don't see these easements taking place until a project's developed.
Okay.
So, you know, once we were like, say, for, I see it on this 36-inch, is that, I'm gonna get all the engineering done, I'm gonna get the easement documents done, and I'm gonna look for a grant, I'm gonna find a grant. If I find a grant, I'm gonna reach out to your board, to do a letter of support, my board to do a letter of support, and then I'm gonna apply, put a grant application in it. And in the grants, you gotta show what, like, there's a match. And that match could be in kind services, it could be that easement, you know, it could be, and it's money. And so the thing is, what I always try to do is get a really good grant, because I don't wanna spend a lot of money. I don't wanna double the match or triple the match. I wanna give as much money, less money as I can, so, you know, those facility plans that I'm talking about, they raise your grant scores, where you don't have to give additional money to raise your grant scores, because we're competing against other agencies for these grants, and so it's a real competitive process. But also too, is I think we might get ahead of everybody, because other people might not have shovel-ready projects. So if I have a couple shovel-ready projects, it could, where they're just ready to go out to bid, things could happen for us.
So, Richard, do you need a commitment from us as to we're willing to spend up to X number of thousands of dollars in a match, so you know what you've got to work with from this end, or are you going to come back to us with the, go get the grant and then come back?
I would be coming back to you when I find a grant to talk with you about all that.
Okay.
Yeah. And but the one I'm really looking for support with is the stormwater facility plan. Is there, if there's a way to compile everything you have to have for, you know, permits and everything, just for your daily operations, for any deficiencies you have, so that way I can give it to our consulting engineer Dyer, and they can look at it and say, okay, how much is it going to cost for us to compile all this and fit it into the plan? And so then, you know, that's what I'd be looking at. So I don't know what that number is, but maybe it's 10,000, maybe it's 20,000. I don't know. And I don't even know if that's something real or not, because I don't know nothing about ports. And I'm just brainstorming on that.
I think it's a little bit too early to discuss that anyway, because that, we don't want to scare each other off.
Yeah.
With non-factual finance numbers.
Yeah.
We would rather you come back to us with the facts, and then we'll discuss it. But sit and dream about numbers is not good.
No. And so for me to do that, I kind of need some information from you, what your stormwater permits, your issues, or whatever. And so somehow I could kind of quantify something to give to Dyer so that they can, you know, provide that cost.
You want to deal with action item A and then go to the rest?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So absolutely.
On action item A, which deals with the 36-inch storm drain easement, I would make a motion to approve the temporary construction easement to perform work on the 36-inch storm drain on port property at no charge.
Can I get a second on Richard's motion?
I second.
Just for a second, can I get a roll call? Danielle, please.
Sharon? I was looking at the second motion. Why wouldn't we have chosen it?
There are two different motions. This is just one.
Oh, I thought it was choose
no.
The other the way it was written. Okay, yes. Joe?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes.
Ron?
Yes.
I'll make a second motion to approve the permanent 36-inch storm drain easement on port property for the sediment basin structure at no cost.
Can I get a second on Richard's motion, please?
I second it.
Just for a second. Roll call, Danielle.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Ken?
I have one question. Does this answer give you the information you need to proceed
yes.
between you and Gary?
Yeah, because I'm not going to have these easement documents ready. They're working on them right now, but I'm not going to present them to you until I actually have a project going.
Okay,
so,
yes.
Richard?
Yes.
Ron?
Sharon, can you wait for a vote, please?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so we're all good. There you go. Thank you, Sharon. Okay, so we're...
So with respect to item B, I think what you're looking for here is just general direction to the manager to cooperate with the county roadmaster and develop this storm drain master plan update.
Correct.
I don't think we need a motion on that.
No, I don't think we need a motion on that either, Richard.
Okay.
No.
Right.
Yep. We are willing to work with the county.
So that, you know, you talked about you had another facility plan. Maybe I could get a copy of that for Dyer to look at. I don't know what's in that. Is there any stormwater stuff in that facility plan? Or anything about permits or...
You're talking about a strategic business plan or... So, I don't know.
I don't know what kind of
plan. We don't have any sort of facility plan. We have a strategic business plan that we're doing right now that we can definitely give you a copy, but there's nothing in it per se that references storm drains, but it's probably...
Does it reference the rock and build up in your port?
No, but it's probably a good thing that it doesn't, because we can utilize what we're going to do working together in this facility plan and be able to merge it maybe at some point with our strategic business plan, and it won't be conflicting information. It can be information that can be just shoved right into it and hopefully be a part of, you know, because we're going to be working together like this and then putting, you know, and possibly, you know, the county taking over some of these drains. Our strategic business plan shouldn't have a building over the top of it or, you know, in the way of it or anything like that. So we want to make sure that all that flows together so the easements are a possibility and our new plan doesn't get in the way of that.
Right.
And we, you know, we do have a new road, you know, in our strategic business plan. We have other roads, so it would probably be good to work with these, because we'd probably want to be able to utilize some of our parking lot water and other things into some of these existing culverts that are already running through as well. Being that water, parking lot water, is exempt.
Right.
So we can dump it right into county storm drains without permits and be able to just discharge it into the water. So it's all a really good thing to have it, and probably it's even better that it's separate right now.
Can I take Richard outside? I have a private question. I have a question to ask, but I'd like
to get you any salmon, I swear.
Right. I would like to have a little bit of a consultant on a question for Richard.
You want to take a break for 5 minutes?
Could we?
Well,
and you were just talking. Okay, I got it. Travis, you can come too, please.
We'll come.
Adjourn out of recess at 2:53. Mr. Roadmaster, did you have anything else further to discuss with the board?
No.
Okay. Could we put Chris ahead of item C on action items? Could we let Chris speak? Would you like to speak now, Chris?
Sure. Very informally, really. I just...
Could you introduce yourself?
Christopher Pash, Curry County Commissioner. A couple things I'd like to say is, first of all, it's been a lot of fun to liaise with Richard. As you guys can probably imagine, we are working very, very well together, and Richard's a very forward-thinking person, likes to plan ahead, and I like that a lot. So he and I have spent some time together in the county and doing some things, and I'm really pleased to work with him. So
nice to hear, Chris.
A couple things going on with water. I've had 3 meetings with the Fazio, and I've even went to Washington and met with him there about the river, all the rock, the fish, and everything else going on. And he says he really wants to do a lot, but he never does anything. So we went over, this year I went over his head to Department of the Interior.
Good for you.
And actually met with Secretary Bernhardt and Williams, which is his right-hand guy. Really good people. As some of you may know, Secretary Bernhardt is an avid outdoorsman, loves to fish, loves to get out in the mountain. Actually, at his age, he still says he likes to get out and do things. So we're trying to get him here right now. We're shooting for September, if nothing blows up in the world. So I just want you guys to know that if we get him here, I would like to, I'll let you know plenty of advance, but I'd like him to come down and spend, if his schedule allows, to come down and spend a few hours down here in the fort. My schedule is to get them to look at the Rogue River, the Chetco River, and all the ports in the county, all three ports. So that would be, you know, on our wish list. We're trying to get a lot of the rock cleaned out of the Rogue River, circumvent the Corps of Engineers, and then some of the things down here that are going on, you know, that you guys can maybe make a plan to present to them. But while I was there also, we have a President Trump set up an organization that circumvents a lot of the process for permitting, for doing things in ports and rivers. While they're filing their lawsuits, he's already issued a permit. This group has already issued their permit to start digging or moving or whatever we have to do. And I can get you that information, Alex, if you guys want to contact them directly for something, I'll give you their information. But I contacted them 2 months ago. And when I got back from NACO, I waited about 6 weeks for the Corps of Engineers to get hold of me. No one got hold of me. So I contacted this guy and said, okay, I met you at NACO in Washington. You promised this, this, and this. He said, what do you need? I told him what I needed. And within 3 days, I had 4 or 5 emails from different people in the Corps nationwide. I have since had several Zoom meetings with 15 people in the meeting, engineers and planners and all this stuff. And they are setting up also to have the Corps come down here to look at getting a lot of the rock moved out of the Rogue River and the issues that we're having around the bridge there, because we've got about 8 foot of rock in the river between Elephant Rock and the mouth of the river. There's about 8 foot of new rock in there. We've got to get moved. So I just want to let you guys know, if you got an issue, this guy might be an excellent person for you to get a hold of. And the president appointed him, and he has the president's ear. Yes.
So this group you're talking about, President Trump put into place to make it easier for permits.
The guarantee permits within 1 year. He says, I've never gotten more than since Trump appointed me. We've never had any permit in any waterway in the nation. It's taken more than a year.
Amazing. That's good news, Chris.
So, and then the bad news is Curry County is getting ready to sue the Corps of Engineers for the issues with the hatchery, and it's going to be probably a joint lawsuit with Josephine County and Jackson County for all the issues that we're facing from them tearing out the dams up there. And all of, we believe, and we've had engineers and scientists come in and say that's the reason for most of the rock that's come down. But it's a lot of the failures. That's not our gripe. Our gripe is more the fisheries, the hatchery up there, the spawning grounds, the temperature going up in the river, fish aren't spawning correctly, all of that. And they were under contract to do that, and they haven't done it 1 year since 1972. They've never provided on that contract like they were supposed to. So we are looking at doing a joint three-county lawsuit with them to move this forward. So just letting you guys know that that's getting ready to happen as well. And we will be asking a lot of professional fishermen, a lot of people that have lived here for their entire life to possibly, you know, get involved in testimony and those kind of things of the change that they've seen in the river and the fish, which the members speak for themselves.
When is those dams tore down, Chris?
What do you
think? Sure. Savage Rapids came out about 2008, I think.
Was it that long?
Gold Ray was probably 12.
Yeah, 11 or 12. Yeah, it was 3 or 4 years later this year.
There's several other tributary dams that have been taken out as well to provide fish passage.
But they've also never done anything to refix the spawning grounds. And the temperatures in the river are 3 degrees warmer than they were. I mean, they've got a lot of great places up there to recreate spawning grounds. Steve Barlin has been involved in this a lot. And he's identified a lot of places that, you know, for money, they can go in and fix. But they said there was nothing the matter with the hatchery. They wouldn't even send anyone over to look at the hatchery. And ODFW is saying, no, there's issues over there. And then last year we lost a third of our smolt, our babies, from the hatchery. So then they finally ordered someone to go over there, and they found $4.2 million worth of damage to the hatchery. So that's what's actually started this whole thing. It's
How do we keep up with information that you get to receive on that, Chris?
I can tell you.
Richard, Richard is our go-to guy for this. Okay.
Just call me. Well, I can just tell you that I hear about that stuff all the time, because a lot of that involves art.
Because I'd like to hear more about that.
But that's the other thing is, you know, I've always said that before I got elected. I wanted to have this relationship with our ports. You know, we're all in this together. And
done a great job, Chris.
I love the outdoors, and time is getting of the essence. We're about to have a new board seated in 6 months. Mm-hmm. And something else Richard said, you know, if you're going to apply for, you know, some of these grants, time gets, you got to get them in quick on that. So he may have to have called special meetings to get something okayed right away, so that he can get it sent in right away so that we get approvals.
So if Bernhard comes here, what are you going to ask him to do?
I saw you put your head down when I said that. You know, why was that?
Well, for reasons I'll tell you offline.
Okay. I want him to look at everything. Honestly, I feel like Congressman DeFazio is stonewalling us. He says a lot of positive things in meetings, but he's never done one thing to help the ports, in my opinion. Oh, he throws nickels and dimes. But when I see, you know, $52 million going into a port north of here that basically does the same things that this port does, and you're getting nickels and dimes, and he's promised to do things in the Rogue River that he's never done, hasn't even had a study that he promised he would do, I just said, you know what, I'm not going to get anywhere with him, so who do I go to? The Department of the Interior. And I just happened to call Williams, who was his right-hand guy. If you want to talk to him, he's right here. Okay.
My point is, what are you going to ask him to do?
I want him to just look at everything here and hopefully bring some people with him that know, and we can enter, you know, a couple of engineers from here that have been, like I said, been here all their lives. I had a guy look at the Rogue River, and he said, I've been here for 60 years. I don't remember his name. He's an engineer here, a river engineer. And he said, the Rogue River has a cork in it. It's got to be moved. So I think if people like that can get in front of him and talk to him about the issues that are actually here, what's happening to the fishing industry here, what's happening to the tourism industry here, that he may be able to do something to push it along.
Well, the reason I ask is because the bottleneck you're going to run into on salmon is going to be Department of Commerce, who controls NOAA and the National Marine Fisheries Service. So Fish and Wildlife Service won't have much to say about salmon,
right,
directly, but Commerce would be the people that you'd have to reach out to Wilbur Ross and say, look, we need you to be dealing effectively with permitting issues on some of this stuff as it relates to salmon habitat.
Right, and that's what I think it is. A lot of that for the Rogue is getting the Rogue River back in its socket, getting it that, you know, you can move to grab some of the rock in there to get the temperatures back down, so that when they do release fish from the hatchery, they go out, you know, in a timely fashion versus laying around and getting picked off or getting disease. Well, there's a lot of predatory fish by the time they're released, and maybe we can get them released sooner. Those are things that, you know, can be dealt with at ODF&W and the Corps, but again, him sitting over the Corps, I think he can maybe talk to some people in Washington that could kind of push that along. So I'm asking for a bigger voice than mine, that's all. Somebody that can say, you know what, I was there, I saw it, could you help them? You know, I'm not asking them to go in and say, damn it, do this, you know.
Thank you.
Thank you for that, Chris. Are there any further comments for Commissioner Pash about our roadmaster? Yeah, thank both of you for your time and your efforts getting down here to the Hooskanagan roadblock.
We'll keep in touch with you.
Yep.
Thank you.
So moving on with action items, we're going to go to action item C, the Clark sunken boat saga. Gary?
All right, just quickly.
First of all, Gary, let me ask. Are all the commissioners on this board for mayor with this Clark sinking?
I know very little.
Reading this.
Right. Okay. It's a really bad, nasty thing. It's cost the port one hell of a lot of money. We should not have had this spent. But With that being said, we need to really look at their insurance policy. Somehow we need to get full access to their insurance policy, because I have made a ton of phone calls to commercial insurance companies. And there is and should be, if that boat had, if it had any kind of pollution insurance, which I think you and I discussed that it did, then that is wreck removable.
That's not necessarily true.
Okay, if it's in.
David, and he said just because it has pollution insurance doesn't mean it.
Correct, but it could be in there, some of that microscopic wording.
I went rounds and rounds and rounds with them. DEQ, I talked to them. I said the same thing.
Wait, who'd you go round and round with?
DEQ and David Allen Insurance with the policy, you know, how the policy was written. Pollution. When a boat sinks in the water, it's a pollutant. Fiberglass, anything that's in it would be classified as a pollutant. That needs to be removed. If you go talk to David Allen or insurance companies or the nitty gritty of what an actual pollutant is, it's the battery acid. It's not really so much the fiberglass. It's all the fluids. It's the fluids that are on it. That's what it's going to cover for the pollutant. But the boat itself being is not a pollutant, and that's what you need, what they say is then wreck removal for us to be able to take it out. And if you don't have it and the boat's not an ongoing pollutant, the insurance company's not going to pay for it is what they're getting at.
And that's not necessarily true neither, because when I talked to David Allen, I didn't get to talk to Deb or Mona.
I did it on those people.
See, my boat was a sink. I am fully covered.
Correct.
And
it's a policy.
And my wreck removal is separate from the pollutions and stuff like that.
Did you add that to your policy yourself?
It came with it.
Right, it comes with that. So with her insurance policy, somehow we really need to get full access to her policy, possible.
We did get the policy.
And did you have a professional review it?
We had James, our cow or broker, review it. And we also went to SDIS as well.
And what did they tell you?
Well, she didn't have wreck removal. It was excluded within her policy. It was specifically excluded.
So we need to change our policy, and we also need to change our.
We did.
Right, and we also need to change our mortgage agreement then.
Well, our policy says now it's got to be watercraft and wreck removal. It's got to be stated wreck removal. So I think we're covered with that.
Okay, so now from now on, when somebody applies for a mortgage, a new mortgage, they must prove wreck removal.
And we are actively doing that. And we have a bunch of weird questions coming up because they do weird things on that document cover page, and we're working through that.
We are now becoming insurance somewhat experts. Every policy, it's the most difficult thing we have right now doing mortgage is making sure that the port is covered insurance-wise with these things, because every policy a person can choose to have wreck removal removed. The policy writer could not, you know, we talk with most State Farm policies, wreck removal is included in it. But if somebody doesn't want that, they can have the option to take it out like that cart did.
And so my question, do you know how much that saves them if they delete that?
I don't know. I can't imagine it's very much money, but I'm not sure.
Right. So my other question to the management staff is, where does the port's insurance come in on wreck removal? We have no coverage for wreck removal either? Are we able to get wreck removal?
It's only 30 foot and under boats that would cover, and they have...
Our policy.
Yeah, our policy.
30 foot and under. Okay, so we do have wreck removal somewhat.
Yeah, and you got to have, Travis will chime in here, but you got to meet their criterias of before they cover it. So it's got to be a boat that we never have any knowledge of having problems with it. That's one. You got to have a higher authority saying that this boat's got to be removed at some cost. So that higher authority is like...
That higher authority would be... Well, I'm still trying to find a higher authority that would put themselves out there to say, yes, it needs to be removed. It's very, very difficult to find somebody. It's going to be a certain circumstance, it'll be a case-by-case issue where if I can call DEQ or the Coast Guard, which maybe the Marine Sheriff. I don't know if they would be a higher authority than us for removing a sunk boat. I don't know. But one of those three we would have to convince to put something in writing that says, yes, this boat needs to be removed from the water.
I'm going to tell you, it will matter where the boat
is. It's going to matter where it is, what this case is, I think it's going to be a case-by-case issue. We have it, but it's very strict criteria that we have to meet them to develop.
The boat sinks in the slip and is not a hazard to navigation.
Right.
But if it happens to sink in even one of the passageways.
Exactly. I mean, if that thing's sinking, we can manage to pull it out. I don't know, but you know, it's going to have to meet the certain criteria that they have for our SCIS insurance.
Well,
isn't going to cover.
So there's also federal channel waters that start on either side of our basin, so it depends where it sinks too. So if it goes to federal channel, it's hands off for us because it's now a Coast Guard.
So now I'm going to ask Sharon if she would mind, if it's not a personal question, Sharon.
What?
What does that wreck removal cost you extra on your policy?
I just was looking for wreck removal.
Joe, you have any information on that? What extra it would cost?
No.
I neglected to ask John.
It depends on my boat. I know
that. Not that much. To have it or not.
What, Richard?
I've never been given an option to have it or not. The policy I have through Boat U.S. is just, there it is.
You got your wreck removal.
I don't know what's in it.
Well, and so I want to make that clear too. Like we're running into this a lot. A lot of people, they have no idea if they have it or not.
Mm-hmm.
They just say I have $500,000 in general liability and watercraft liability, and it's very difficult to deal, you know, for our staff to answer these questions because there's a lot of people, they have no idea. So now they're having to go back or having to look through policies. You know, have the insurance company actually send it to us and almost a conversation between us and their insurance company to decide what they actually have.
Well, I would disagree with you wholeheartedly that it should be your job. It should be the policy owner's
responsibility. Exactly. To get to the nut of this, I don't know why this court's involved with this. You buy insurance to protect yourself.
Correct.
The bottom line is, to me, the liability entire thing falls on the boat owner.
Correct.
And if she's not willing to pay it, then we have to figure out what kind of remedy to do to address that.
And therefore, that brings up the other subject of enforcement.
We need to
enforce that somehow.
Well, we just don't give them mortgage. But there's another problem with the mortgage holders come in here. They say, well, I got wreck removal because their document says wreck removal on it. But then it says like 10% of whatever damage.
Correct.
They got some weird language. So we have questions, so I throw it to James, he's our expert, and he's like, well, you probably have to look at the policy, and he's like, well, then I tell my staff, just go back and get a document from them saying they got wreck removal.
From
the insurance company.
Not from the policy holder.
Right.
The insurance company.
Right.
Correct.
So a lot of times the holders of the insurance, or the people that have the insurance, they think they got wreck removal because it says wreck removal on it. And then they argue with us saying, well, I got wreck removal. Well, maybe you don't. Or maybe you don't have the proper coverage. So it's very, well, it's a learning curve for both sides.
And then on top of all that, the downfall of all this insurance, the insurance policies are able to be canceled at any time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we can go through all this. I don't know for a fact, but I'm sure there's a fair amount of it that happens. That they go through all the ropes to meet our compliant, what they need to be compliant, and the next month it's canceled. And I've seen that happen way more than one time, that we go through all this to meet our, then the boat doesn't even have it, which is a whole other issue.
I guess one of the cruxes of this that I don't understand here, why we're even tooling with this in terms of insurance, unless the port is named as insurance policy beneficiary. That's not the case. It's the individual that's named that way. Or are you named?
No, we're named additional insured. This whole thing comes down to that State Farm is not paying because it does not include wreck removal.
For this case here.
For this case that we're talking about now.
So I have a question. Why can't we have Martha make a little checklist that meets her legal that says, I have wreck removal in my insurance. I have this. I have whatever the t-
topics you want to cover. At the bottom of it, they sign they are personally responsible for all of those items, whether their insurance covers it or not. You guys don't have to sit and do hours of research then. It's real simple, whatever it is, 5-6 major topics. They sign, they're responsible for it.
Yeah. I would really hate
cancel their insurance or not.
I would really hate to think the poor staff's going to be spending buku hours when it's, in my opinion, it's not the staff's job. It is absolutely the policyholder's responsibility to either get that certificate from the insurance underwriter. You know, we just had Richard say he's got a policy. He don't know if he got recommended or not. He's being honest. He hasn't read it. He doesn't know. And here just recently with myself, I'll tell you just how easy it is, what you said, to cancel that insurance. I financed a riding lawnmower. Gave them my debit card, my bank number and all that, right? Not bank account, just my debit card number, right? About 2 days later, I couldn't find my debit card. Did I leave it at Sears? What happened to my debit card? Couldn't find it. What did I do? I canceled it. What did that do to the finance company that I financed it to? I could have said, tough luck, people. You don't got my bank account no more. Send your bill collectors. So the same thing with this insurance company policy. Is they can cancel it, they can get it, and then cancel it and save 10 cents. Because I'm sure, Joe, we need to really find out what that cost is extra.
Thanks.
Yeah, Carson.
We have insurance that covers 30-foot or less wreck removal.
Correct.
So this boat is covered under our insurance.
It's not covered.
Because we did not have a higher authority tell us that we could lift the boat because it sunk in its foot.
Right.
So what?
It could still be sitting there. I mean, if you know, and DEQ wouldn't have told us to take it out. We have no higher authority. And I think, you know, seeing all this, this is how a lot of harbors get stuck with sunk boats just sitting in their harbor. Because they can't afford to do it. And I like your checklist idea. The problem that we run into that is that even if we have a signature, you know, on a paper that says, yeah, I'm responsible for it, it's $14,000 for a 28-foot boat. I mean, if it's a Joe-sized boat, I mean, we're talking $100,000.
$200,000.
What is the definition of higher authority?
Exactly. The federal spill response team would be a great place to start.
They won't tell you either. We asked everybody we deal with, and they won't give us authority.
Insurance companies are not, you know, they say a higher authority, but they don't. The insurance company won't specify who that is.
Get you a good surveyor then.
They won't specify who that is. They just say a higher authority. So when we go to any higher authorities that we can possibly think of, Coast Guard, DEQ, or a sheriff's department, all of them are like, well. That is in our best management practices. That
also DEQ, Clean Water Act.
That's what I'm getting at. So that certainly implies to me that if you are required to protect waters of the United States from pollution, that higher authority would tell you to remove the source of the pollution.
Well, that was our argument.
That I argued that till I was absolutely blue in the face, but that removing the boat is the wreck removal. Handling the pollutants, you know, I said, literally, as far as what I can understand, the pollutants being handled would be containing it with booms and containment booms. To remove the contaminant source, you remove the problem, you remove the boat. They want you to contain the problem and, it's two separate things the way they're classifying that. We all know, and that's my argument, you want the pollutant removed, remove the pollutant source. It's not how they see it. So that's where we're stuck with, you know, this wreck removal and putting, you know, that's why we're adding it, and that's why we keep adding things to it, is because it's so specific what each one of these places are asking for, just for us to be able, you know, to get coverage to be able to do this.
So let's talk about fire, Travis. If my boat catches on fire, and in two,
I got a vote on the side of me in N1, and I got a vote on the side of me in N3. If my boat catches on fire, burns N3 and N1, I'm reliable. I'm responsible for that. I'm accountable for that. Okay, so if a boat sinks in N2, and there's a boat in N1 and N3, that sunk boat is jeopardizing the safety of those both of those boats on either side of it. Because it's not properly tied, it's not properly moored, it's not contained.
I think you would be running into, that would be a opinion. That would be an opinion that you
of
would,
the higher power.
Right, and who would that higher power be? The Coast Guard? Us? I get what you're saying. I'm not trying to argue. I completely agree. I just the roadblocks that get put up in front of us, it's not people thinking common sense to get removed. I mean, we're dealing with insurance companies that are saying we have to find a higher authority. They don't know who a higher authority is. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, we should be the higher authority.
We are the ones
that are responsible for the water, maintaining the Clean Water Act, maintaining what we have, maintaining pollutants.
100% correct, Travis.
But when we go to SDIS, who is backed by SDAO, they did not pay us. So.
Well, there's two things why we didn't get paid. One was the higher authority, which I've noted here, and two, we didn't notify them within 30 days of the incident. So that was bad on us because we were fighting.
And these reported within the
hour. Well, immediately, but we were fighting their insurance.
State Farm the whole time, you know, thinking, well, they have insurance.
Yeah.
State Farm's that's who we're dealing with, and we kind of, you know, we dropped the ball with letting them know.
I think it's a learning experience. I think now you and Gary know. I mean, this is a first-time occurrence of this problem, and I think that you and Gary, it's just like anything else. It's like everything else in the sport. When it happens, it's just a setback. But we do need to make that policyholder responsible for a certificate of proof sharing.
Okay, so Roy, I don't know if you're aware, but the port did send to the mortgage holders a letter.
Correct.
That we have to have that wreck removal insurance.
Yeah.
And what I don't want to happen is a barrage of unhappy people coming in and bashing that front office. I do not want that to happen at all.
There's been a few.
There's going to be way more if we don't get a handle on it real quick, because, like the commercial fishermen, every one of their boats, I'm assuming, in talking to my commercial underwriters for the past 3 days, that they do have wreck removal. Now, is it 10%? Is it 1%? Now I got to go back and find that out. I got to call my people again to find out what is wreck removal. Because you put some doubt in my mind.
What's the dollar amount?
Is it 100% wreck removal? Is it 20% wreck removal? What is to our ports? And we have Joe and I. Ken, I'm sure at one time, if not still is, Ken used to do the federal boat inspections around here. So we'll go back, or I can give you the numbers and you guys can call in. AJ Gallagher is more than willing to spill anything you want for information if you're willing to listen and call in.
I'm still learning insurance. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never thought I'd have to get this deep into knowledge of insurance, but a lot of what I find, standard is standard, but not necessarily what everybody gets. Anybody has the ability to take, add, remove anything, and it just gets wrote into whatever the policy is.
And maybe on this wreck removal, maybe they're able to say, maybe the insurance, because I don't like insurance. I don't like insurance people worse than a dentist. They could possibly have different levels of wreck removal. Maybe that's where that 10%, 20% come in. Maybe they want to pay 10% because, oh, my boat will never sink. But maybe it will, so I want 100% coverage on wreck removal. And in the insurance world, if you've got a master policy, the little underlying policies like wreck removal, chump change. You delete that, and you might save $20 a year on your bill. So I don't know, you know, some people, $20 are tighter than the hubs of hell. They will do it.
They do it. So, I mean, that.
But I would ask for somewhat of a leniency now, just for good user feelings, staff, and service. I don't know how we're going to enforce this yet, because we don't know what we're enforcing, because we don't know the percentage answer. We don't know if it's in there, if it's not. So
right now is what we are enforcing is that it has to stay black and white in there.
But not in the policy. You're going to need a certificate now because that policy.
It says it with the information certificate that we get.
Good.
If it does not say specifically, because it will say water class liability, pollution liability, and now wreck removal.
500,000.
500,000. They will all say it. Because there is some, you know, they're 100,000 or 300,000. And we send them back and that is what we're doing. We don't, right now, we're not looking into if that wreck removal covers 10% or 15%. We're not looking into that. Because we don't.
I don't think we need to be.
Something that we have right. That we're going to go. It just has to have certain amount of wreck removal attached to it. And if it doesn't, then you don't get mortgage.
No, we don't want to use the term certain amount. 100%.
Yeah.
Go
ahead, Martha. Martha's.
Thank you, Martha.
I just want to make another comment about the concern of, you know, people showing us their certificate and then canceling. We should be able to get those policies endorsed to provide a notice of cancellation to the port if either the policy is canceled or if it's changed in any way. And at that point, you know, if we're notified of a change, then if the insurance doesn't fall within the minimum requirements, you know, we can write a letter and say your mortgage is subject to termination and you don't get this back where it needs to be.
Yeah, I know.
That's correct, Marsh Joseph. On our lease, Joe, if we don't provide insurance or something like that, doesn't our insurance notify the port immediately?
If we're disinsured, it does.
So that's already set up, and it should be set up in the mortgage insurance, is it?
It is. The problem is sometimes they slip by our staff, and then you don't find out until something happens.
Our staff or their staff, it's happened numerous times where, you know, it all comes, your notification is as good as the employee that you have that's giving them. And
catching them.
You know, that catches them. There's been multiple times where we are not notified. A lot of times.
Yeah.
Which, I know that happens, and I know that's unavoidable, you know, I mean, but we are supposed to be being notified, but it doesn't happen all the time.
So we're going to have human error. You know?
Right.
There is definitely a factor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, Clark, the mortgage holders don't need to sign anything separate. I mean, they're already liable. And they promise to have the insurance and they're liable. The problem is when they don't have the insurance, then the port has to go through an extra step of trying to collect all the costs rather than just working with the insurance agency, which if they accept the claim is a lot easier than, you know, trying to go to court or sending it off to a collection agency who takes a percentage or, you know, the other option here, taking a complete loss.
So Martha, let me ask you this. If I live in Butte Falls, Montana, and I have a 60-foot boat in this port, pleasure craft, and I have somehow neglected to tell the port that I have canceled my insurance or didn't have wreck removal or one thing or another, and they call me in Butte Falls, Montana and say, hey, Roy, your boat just sank to the bottom of the port of Brookings Harbor. And I say, okay, have a good day. That's exactly what happens with the abandoned boats here, whether they're in a slip or they're not in a slip. We don't have a recourse of any kind, do we, Martha?
Well, you can sue the individual, but that's, you know, sort of your last resort for a few different reasons. One, even if you're completely successful, you've had to expend additional money on your attorney in order to file that suit and follow it through. And then what you end up with at the end is a piece of paper that says so-and-so owes you money.
Right.
You know, winning a lawsuit doesn't give you money. It gives you a paper. So especially if you have, there are lots of individuals that own boats that have money and assets, and there are lots of individuals who own boats who basically the boat's the only thing they have. And when that's the case, there's just nothing to go after, and that's why the insurance is so important.
Right. So Martha, in saying that,
as a lawyer, as a professional lawyer, I'm understanding it would be a last resort for you to recommend the port suing, because this last instance was $4,800, Gary, is that correct?
$14,000.
$15,000.
$15,000, yeah.
Okay. I misunderstood a conversation with Gary. So $15,000, what would that case cost? I mean, what would that cost you, Martha? What would we have to pay you if we went to court to sue for $15,000? What would be the offset?
Well, it all depends. I mean, I'm going to guess like three.
Your part would be about $3,000.
That's a guess.
Okay, I thank you for that personal information, Martha. So we got $3,000, now we're down to $12,000, and we end up at the end of that with a piece of paper that Betty owes us $12,000. And our time, our staff spends,
well,
it would be...
You would end up with a piece of paper probably saying she owed you $18,000, but you would have had to put out that other three. Right. But I don't know anything about this person at this point, whether she has any assets together, whether you have a job where you can garnish wages. And then when you get to that second part of collecting, then you also have to pay for that piece as well.
Okay. So Martha, on this particular case we're talking about, are you on retainer until we receive the settlement, or does the port have to pay you upon services rendered?
No, that would just be hourly upon services rendered.
Okay. Thank you, Martha.
Martha, let me ask you a different question. So if I came in here and purported to have what you asked me to have, that being a legal requirement that I have to meet to moor my boat here, and then I knowingly and willingly cancel part of that agreement, is that fraud?
No, I think it's a breach of contract.
Okay, which would be a separate issue.
It's a breach of contract, and you would be responsible for essentially the same damages. You know, that's basically what we have right now. It's not really a breach as much as it's enforcement of the terms of a contract. But it wouldn't provide you with any additional remedy or amount to be collected.
Okay. None of that would rise to the level of crime.
No, I mean, fraud has to, you know, you'd have to prove what's in somebody's mind before they did it. You know, people can come up with all kinds of excuses to why they changed one thing or another. I mean, that would just, I don't think, if you're thinking, there are civil causes for fraud, which can then lead to higher damages. As far as criminal, I wouldn't ever see a DA's office being interested in this kind of case as a criminal action. And even at the civil level, where you're looking at a much lower threshold for a burden of proof, I think it's really tough to show what's in somebody's head and why they may have changed their insurance at one point. If it was truly to defraud, or, you know, they needed to save some money and didn't realize it was a big deal, you know, whatever they defense they come up with.
Okay. Thank you, Martha. So does the board agree that the direction the management is going, that proof separate of their policy, that wreck removal is in place, separate of the policy? That would be a certificate clearly stated. And with what Ken said, I believe that is not a bad idea. It's another leg to stand on. But definitely, does the board agree that a separate proof of wreck removal is, now are we gonna break all these policies down and have proof of oil pollution, proof of personal injury, proof of hull, proof of hull and machinery? I mean, are we gonna start breaking down all these policies for separate certificates, or is this gonna be just a
one certificate? Should one certificate should show you each type of coverage that they have.
And the percentage, Martha?
Usually there's a dollar amount associated with what the limit of liability is for each type of coverage.
And it does, it
right.
will sit there and lay out every single thing you have, like what you said, Mr. Hall.
Right. Just like life insurance.
It lays it all out. And that's what we're looking at right now, that staff's currently looking at to prove that these policies, in fact, actually have them. And what we're finding is that a lot of these policies don't have wreck removal. Or we're finding that it's included, it doesn't say it per se on there, but it is included, but you have to read the policy to actually know that it's actually included with it. Because it doesn't necessarily say, all right, because we deal with, you know, a lot of different insurance companies.
Is there a way that we can develop a form that can be endorsed by the issuing insurance agent? That says, the policy that we're looking at requires these things. We certify that that is in the policy that you issued.
That gets sent to the insurance company with a request in that form that if this policy is canceled or altered, we would like to be informed.
It should be notified us to begin with. I mean, right. If we absolutely decided that we wanted to make a form and have our staff start engaging with all of our mortgage holders' insurance companies to make sure that happens.
If you're listed as an additional insured, it should be a requirement that they notify the court.
So on behalf of the defense of the staff, then, we're going to have to do what you're doing. You're going to depend on human error. It's going to happen. And there's a catch-22.
But you can also, if you have a list of those things that you want to see on the certificate of insurance coverage, if there's policy has, whatever coverage, and that includes wreck removal, but they don't usually list that out, if you give them a list, they can modify it just to show that on that certificate, yes, this piece of the policy includes wreck removal. I think they'd be happy to do that. I've had to suggest that, insurance companies do various things like that, and they're usually happy to do it if they have the instruction of exactly what you need to see on that certificate. They'll make sure it's on there if that's indeed covered.
Martha, would
so you shouldn't have, what I'm saying is you shouldn't have to, go through the policy. You're right, staff shouldn't have to do that. That's silly.
Martha, would you be willing to draft a form of some sort to present to our management just for a starting point on something like that?
Yeah, and that could be something simple that then you hand out to, the mortgage. This is what we need on your certificate of insurance or your evidence of insurance. But that would just be easier for the insurance agents.
Mine, on our website.
If you want to moor your boat here,
right.
Here's the type of insurance. Here's what you need to do.
Yeah, something like this. This is acceptable insurance document.
I feel like we're starting to take an umbrella policy, a $5 million umbrella policy. It doesn't list everything that's in it. It doesn't at all. You have to dig right into what a policy is. And we're seeing more and more umbrella policies over watercraft liability.
Sure.
That now is, we can have them, break down what it is. The problem is we're probably still doing the legwork to figure out what it is.
I think if Martha creates, with you guys' input, creates this is what the insurance should cover, you give them the form, they sign it. Now, it's not your responsibility to sit there and read every one of these insurance policies. This is what they've signed off that their insurance covers.
I understand that, but that's not getting us to solve the problem if they're both things. We have them saying a signature saying, yeah, I have it. But when the boat sinks and they're faced with a $14,000 bill, it's not going to do it.
Which we haven't addressed yet.
Right.
Well, really, it should be up to the mortgage holder to make sure that their insurance company has it listed there for the port.
But there again, if it's altered and it sinks, then Travis is stuck with the boat anyway.
Yeah, you're not going to get 100% coverage. We're going to have people doing weird things to us, and luckily this is only one thing that happened to us so far, and hopefully we're learning, and we just prevent things happening in the past, right?
Well, I think you're taking the right steps. I really do. Right. I think you've managed this report very well, you and your staff, and I think this is just...
And sometimes the insurance company doesn't give you guys our insurance. I've had to go and get copies and bring down here when they told me they spent it 2 times. So, you know,
we just have to work through those.
It's just more burden on the staff. Your staff is going to have to go to work on another issue. But I really would recommend that Martha draft up some kind of a form. And I don't know that just the policyholder signing that form doesn't get it with me. That form is a form that we send to their insurance company for verification from the underwriter, not from the policyholder.
Or the mortgage holder does it. As long as we get a
document. Or it's something. I think when you get your certificate of evidence of insurance back from the mortgage holder, you hold up the two pieces of paper next to each other and you make sure that certificate of insurance has, you know, all those checks on it. And then you've said, okay, it appears they have the insurance we're asking for. So you've got confirmation from the insurance company that, yes, those coverages have been purchased at least as of that day.
Right. Agreed, Martha. So do we want to get back on the agenda and discuss the park something both?
Yeah.
Thank you.
We're going to direct Martha to work with Gary.
To work with Gary and draft up a draft form to send to Gary and Travis, and then let Gary and Travis, you know, back and forth till there is a set form that will become our certificate of proof of what's in their policy. Yes.
Now.
Okay, Martha?
Understood.
Thank you, Martha. Okay, moving on to Clark's second boat, October 19, 2019. Gary?
Okay, so just so you guys understand the three options I put in here. First off, Kim is recommending that we remove this from the accounts receivable, so it's not on our books, not on our accounting books. But on the other three recommended motions, one is having our lawyer take them to civil court. Or I think a better solution is taking the collections. So the board knows, our agreement with our collection company, we get paid 100%. If they collect the money, we get 100%, but they add 30% more to the client or to the person that owes. So anyways, we're not out of what we send to the collection agency. I know some other collection agencies, they take a percentage of what you're going.
I would rather see it go to civil court, Gary, because here's why. It's too easy to say. Hello? Is Roy there?
Well,
who's this? No, Roy's not here today.
Well, the collection agency does take them to court as well.
But to get a hold of them.
Well, they'll take them to court to get a hold of them.
It's totally.
I'm just letting you know what the collection agency provides for their service.
How successful and how many times has our collection agency paid you money since we've hired them?
I'll have to ask Kim. Kim, you online?
I'd like to know the answer to that.
He's online or not.
How many times has our collection agency paid the port for a settlement?
Yeah. I know in the past we've seen money come in through the collection company, but I can't give you a number of what percentage.
This is Kim. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, this is Kim. I would have to do research on that, but we have been paid for some.
1 out of 10. How many, Kim?
Well, we just picked up a check when we went to the SDAO conference, so I would say probably about 50%.
It's not bad.
I'll take
a lot.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Their resources to collect it.
Yeah. So, thank you for that, Kim. That's good.
Do we know anything about this person? Do they live here locally? Are they out of state?
They have an address here in Brookings.
A street address, Gary?
Oh, yeah.
A physical address.
Yeah.
So I would think collection agency would be the most prudent.
Yeah, I agree. Joe, you agree?
I don't know.
That's tough. It's a catch-22, but 50% is not a bad ratio for collections. I would have guessed.
I would go along with
with the board or everyone?
Yeah. I would go along with Gary and Kim's recommendation on myself. Sure.
I think they're using their resources
and their time, and their personnel.
Address there, they may have property.
And we're going to pay it 100%. They make 30%, so be it, whatever they make.
He benefit us.
My preference is, but I'm
Mr.
not,
what?
Is to sue him, but I'm not married to that. I'm easily persuaded by better ideas.
Is collections, are they?
I like the idea of you sue them and they find against them, you put a lien on their house, you put a lien on their property,
right,
you do something
that.
Like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that takes a lot more legal action, that takes more lawyers.
And then we pay for
that.
That.
And we pay for that.
Right.
With no guarantee of collecting. So, you know, I'll put aside my 45 Colt revolver right now and think, yeah, maybe the collection agency might be the best course of action.
So I think you...
What about Martha's idea or suggestion? What do you have, Martha, to... What would you
what my suggestion would be?
Yeah.
I think because the amount is pretty low in terms of lawsuits, I would recommend collections, especially if you're saying the port has the potential to get back 100%. You know, you're not taking a percentage hit off what is owed. You know, if you were looking at like 40, 50, 60,000, then you definitely want to sue them. I mean, you're even small claims is 10,000. I mean, you're almost in small claims territory in a way. So, just to get the sort of the best bang for your buck, the most efficient process, you don't have to expend any more money. You know, I think the collections make sense. I mean, I'd be happy to do the civil suit and put the money in my pocket, but that's probably not the best route for the port.
Martha, I have a question. If we go to collection agency and they cannot get them served in a reasonable amount of time, does that do we still have the opportunity to sue them within a reasonable amount of time if we chose to?
I'd have to see what the agreement is with the collection agency. I think generally once you turn it over, it's theirs, but I don't know what the agreement is with the collection agency.
Is there a time limit on us as far as filing a lawsuit for this claim?
Yeah, there is a time limit. I think, gosh, I didn't look it up. I mean, we've still got plenty of time. The smallest statute of limitations is 2 years, and I think this is longer than that.
So statute of limitations is 2 years for this, Martha?
At least.
I don't know. It's at least 2 years.
Huh? Okay.
I don't want to let it walk. That's the...
Well, you talked about enforcement. One of the parts of enforcement is consequence.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So if people in this port, you know, are saying, well, geez, you got away with it, then, no, we have to take some affirmative action to do
something
here.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Make sure people understand, hey, look, you know.
We're not laying down.
They're going after these people. So that's an important piece. We got to do something.
Mm-hmm. Roy, I got to go pick up something before 4 o'clock. So I got to leave for 5 minutes.
Okay. If you leave before four, I have to find you $1,500.
Okay.
Cash before you leave.
Can I make a motion?
Make a motion, Richard.
Okay. So I move to submit the clerk's balance amount of $14,958.88 to the Port Collection Agency.
Can I get a second, please?
I'll second that.
Ken Range, second. Roll call Danielle, please.
Sharon? Yes. Joe?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes.
Roy?
Yes. Okay. Motion carries unanimously.
Guys.
Martha, thank you so much for your time and your input today. You've given us a lot of information. It's very helpful to us.
My pleasure. Have a great day.
Hold on, Martha.
Yeah.
We got one more item.
Okay. Oh, that's right.
The RV park seawall.
Okay, so we're going to move on to number five, information items. A is RV seawall. Gary?
Okay. So I just, I'll go over this packet since I just got handed to you guys today. The overview, Harbor Sanitary had a public meeting Tuesday, which we found out in the newspaper that they were talking about the RV park. So Sharon, myself, and Travis went to the meeting to find out what they were talking about the port. So we found out their board and district manager are really concerned about our seawall not being part of our project out there. And the 9 new sites, they're really concerned about 9 new holes going into the sewer system and damaging their system. And they wouldn't accept 9 new holes in their sewer system without a seawall. Then the conversation went into open sewer caps being open and also possible broken risers or broken sewer lines. And that conversation went quite a while. After that meeting, actually the next day, I got with Travis. We were brainstorming some ideas of maybe not so much of a $500,000 seawall that we can't afford. What if we put some kind of a seawall that's like 10 feet off from the edge of it that would, you know, divert the water and the debris and also, you know, take care of the concerns of flooding. So, and also what I found out last couple of weeks researching the RV park is we had a grant back in 2001 where the grant said that we're going to have a 10-foot wide walkway from the riprap and then the parking area. So that was part of the grant. So we don't have a 10-foot walkway out there. So part of this would be like doing two things in one swell swoop of hopefully taking care of their concerns and putting a 10-foot walkway out there, which I think would be happy. I think the public in general would be happy with a 10-foot walkway because people do park up on a sidewalk and block their way. And when two people come together, there's not much room. So there's a plan there. The what I'm suggesting is putting in a concrete ultra block, 2 foot high, and just lay it on top of the ground. We can try this as a trial and see if it works. If it don't work and be easily removed, we're not talking about $500,000 worth of a wall. So the other side of this thing is putting in sewer caps that are spring loaded that would close. So that would also cure their concerns about the caps being open.
They won't give us an exact answer until we have plans that we can submit to them so they can look at it. And then they will tell us their preliminary, what they said is that they wouldn't be accepting it without the wall. Me and Gary have looked through this. I know why we're bringing it to you guys too. Ideas, concrete's the toughest thing we can think of to put out there that would slow down any type of breaking wave over the top of that, that would actually sit there and hold it and suffice as a barrier for a walkway as well. It's not the most attractive looking thing to have out there. We were looking at other blocks that have a more of a decorative side to it. But we're gonna have to come up with something to appease them or this entire project isn't gonna happen.
Martha, I have a question for you, please. When
yes.
And at what point do we call bullying, number one? That's my number one question. I have another question. My first question is, when do we call bullying? Number two question, does Harbor Sanitary have the authority to institute the engineering of a seawall for the Port of Brookings Harbor to meet their standards? Where is she going above and beyond her authority as just, she's the manager of Harbor Sanitary District. Does she have any authority to dictate to any other public entities the engineering specifications to meet their particular needs, Martha?
Well, the Harbor Sanitary District itself does have fairly broad authority in matters that will affect their system. We've requested some of what they can do will depend on what ordinances they've passed. So I know that Gary's been trying to get copies of those, which I requested to see exactly, you know, we want to make sure that not only are they following the laws that apply to them from the state, but that they're also following their own laws. And they're not, like you said, if they're not following their own rules, but just making life hard for the port, then that's, you know, that's not okay. We need to be making sure that what they're asking for is authorized under state law and under their own policies and rules.
When you say under state law, Martha, who do we contact? Who is above and beyond? Who does Harbor Sanitary answer to? Do they answer to the Salem SDAO? Do they answer to, who do they answer to, Martha? As far as the pertaining to the state regulations and laws of, say, an RV park. Just because Harbor Sanitary wants spring-loaded caps, is that an Oregon state requirement of RV parks?
No, I think where that comes in is the, I don't think that there's any state requirement for that. I think that was a proposal by staff to prevent the infiltration of sand and other debris into the sewer system. So they can make reasonable rules and regulations to protect their infrastructure, which apparently they're having issues with debris getting into their pumps or something. And I don't know that they're sure where that's coming from. But, you know, I mean, that's reasonable. It's just like when we don't want people putting bad things in the port storm drains, they don't want bad things going into their sewer lines either.
Correct. Gary?
They're claiming some DEQ regulations about seawater infiltration. I think that's a proper word, right? And also sand going into their system, damaging their pumps. They claim that two pumps have been...
Well, what their problem was they could be fined if the seawater compromised the station in Brookings.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So, Martha, if we, you know, just taking this out to the next steps, if we went to court, the judge would use the reasonable and prudent standard here that says, I'm going to look at the actions of the port to prevent seawater intrusion into Harbor Sanitation's system, and I'm going to do that looking at whether or not the port took reasonable and prudent actions. Would that be the standard?
Well, it depends on if there are actual state regulations or Harbor Sanitary regulations that directly address the particular issue, then you'd have to make sure that you're meeting those first.
Well, where I'm going here is in the case of the port decides to go with these 2 foot high concrete barriers for 500 feet or however many feet it is to prevent any possible seawater intrusion, say for a cataclysmic event. But I mean, the normal seawater intrusion is not anywhere near 2 feet over the top of that sidewalk, for example. And we put spring-loaded caps on the sewer drains to prevent any possibility of those being left open by campers. That would seem to me to be a pretty reasonable and prudent way to deal with this issue.
Right. Yeah, and I think if it gets down to it, and the port decides that whatever Harbor San is requiring or requesting is neither reasonable nor within their authority, then we move forward, and it would be up to Harbor San to sue the port to say, you know, basically get an order from the court that says stop, you can't proceed with this project because of X, Y, and Z. I don't have enough information to make that determination yet on whether there's actual regulations. You know, we would want to make sure before moving forward to the next step that there's not something in black and white that we're violating. I just don't have enough information at this very moment, you know, to tell you that. Ideally, we could present the plans and the board will say, okay, yeah, this alleviates our concerns. If not, we need to evaluate what authority, you know, they have to actually reject that plan.
Well, that's kind of my point. I mean, it seems to me for us to make a decision, we're kind of at the mother may I stage where, yeah, I think it makes sense to spend $30,000 to put up a seawall and put in spring-loaded caps. But if Harbor Sanitation has veto power over that before we can proceed with the development of the 9 sites, and I'm pretty uncomfortable with that.
So I can, you know, to give you a more definitive answer, I would just need a little bit of time to look at some of the regulations and, you know, what we're proposing. If it appears they actually can say, look, we're not going to accept this and we're not going to, you know, I don't know, allow you. We're going to start fining you under our ordinances or take you to court or whatever. I just have not had time to do that specific of an evaluation.
I mean, ultimately, we have, you know, we're about to be on the hook for several hundred thousand dollars in loan fees to do the bathroom and the RV park development. I guess ultimately we could pay that out of our regular revenues. The notion of those 9 sites was that they would pay for that, but I don't think they can stop us from putting in the bathroom and doing that kind of development. Looks to me like the control they have on us is the 9 site development of the 9 sites and the ability to use those to pay the loan off. That's about it.
Well, I think just tying into their sewer system, I think they have all kinds of authority on us. Just tying into their sewer system, they have to review our drawings, and we have to get permits from the county, and they have to sign off on the county permit.
You're talking about the bathroom itself.
I'm talking about everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole project.
Anything that goes into the sewer.
It would be hard for me to believe that they would condition the development of the bathroom, which is a considerable distance from the oceanfront, on putting up a seawall.
Right.
I don't think they would. It's just for us, in our case, the 9 new sites are completely dependent on the project happening or not.
Right.
We can't afford the bathroom. We can't afford the loan. We can't afford any of it without those sites. So, I mean, even though, yeah, they are probably two separate issues, for us, they're a joint issue because we can't do the project without the site. We can't, you know, Harbor Sanitary already said, they're like, well, we may approve it without sewer hookups. Well, even that notion means that we can't afford to pay for a loan. You know, IFA isn't going to say, yeah, go ahead and do it. They're not going to give us permission to still be paying for some of this out of our own pocket.
This comes down to the 9 sector.
It strongly comes down to the 9 sites. And, you know, part of it too, Martha, it's just something that I've been thinking about. Is there anything to be said that we're putting up and alleviating a problem that only happens in if we had a constant, you know, dates when seawater's coming over and sand, but this has happened one time in the last year and a half, almost to date,
right?
A year and a half. One time that this happened, that we're jumping through hoops, you know, to alleviate that, you know, it's not an ongoing problem. It's in a zone where, you know, it'd be almost like, you know, a natural disaster that would happen that, you know, you can't really plan for. There's nothing to say that a 2-foot or a 3-foot seawall is going to cover it when a 3-foot wave hits it. You know, I mean, at what point can Harbor Sanitary determine what Mother Nature is capable of doing for what we have to put in front of it? Like, it only happens a handful of times. I was talking to Gary about it over the last 6 years, it might have happened 5 times. So out of those 1,500 days, 5 days, the ocean broke over for maybe an hour, a period of an hour, maybe 2. You know, so 10 hours total of an ocean breaking over 5 years. Is there anything to be said about how much we have to put in front of that for this occasional thing that happens that is really out of all of our control?
Well, we have an engineer's report on our original proposal for the seawall that told you what the seas were. I remember some documentation in there about what the ocean levels were and that sort of thing.
But and we're well above, so that's what I'm saying. The information that they're going to be basing it on, even at the sea levels, everything says we're below it. I mean, yes, occasionally it does happen, but that we have preventative measures in place for that.
I think the bottom line is, you know, if our engineer says a 2-foot seawall, a 2-foot barrier set 10 feet back from the edge of the riprap would suffice for any known event. And then they say, no, you can't use that. You got to have a higher seawall. And to me, that's when we say, in my view, that's enough.
Right.
You bring an engineer in here to tell us that that isn't going to work.
Correct.
Because our engineer, I mean, you can't, that to me is reasonable and prudent, again, going back to that standard. Let's not.
Well, and what it is.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say, what it is, if they don't have information to the contrary and they refuse, basically what that is it's called an abuse of discretion, meaning you don't have the evidence to back up your position. And
let's go down and look at the record even further, so assuming we end up in court. I mean, let's look at what we've already done at their request. We've already closed down the bathroom. We've covered and sealed up the RV dump station. We put risers on all the RV dump station tubes. We've done just about everything we've asked them to do to try and get this alleviated. Now we've got a whole other set of hoops that they're going to throw at us. But I think there's a point at which any judge in the world would go, okay, all right, that's going to
stop.
So what I can do is just bring back maybe a little bit more, you know, I think in this, Gary says he's going to bring something back on Tuesday, and I can have a little bit more information for you as well on Tuesday.
So what my idea was, just to let you guys know, maybe there's some other solutions about a seawall or some other ideas. That's my point of having this. But also I wanted to bring this back up on Tuesday, have the board's approval to submit whatever plan we come up with, because we need to have some direction to Crow Clay as what to put in the drawings. So, you know, if we just put these caps on these front row or all the sites or whatever we want to do, and the caps are not super expensive, and that seawall, put that on the drawing as well. But I'd like to submit that to them first, mm-hmm. and just get like a pre-approval so that we can put it on the drawings.
Harbor Sanitation?
No, from Crow Clay.
No, from
Crow Clay to Harbor Sanitation.
Harbor Sanitation, right. And if they don't give us approval, then we'll go to the next step, or whatever that's going to be.
Do we think Harbor Sanitary is going to start looking at what we have?
I think they have to.
Gary, I need to go over there a bit more for a second.
Okay.
On the seawall, we only have flooding in one spot that I'm aware of, and that's about where the existing restroom that's been closed.
It depends what.
Well, the surge.
We've had different areas of flooding.
All right, but the primary area is right there, isn't it?
And north of where you're going.
And going that way.
Okay, and I don't remember the elevations. And what's the elevation there? And there versus in the center.
Was there like a 5-foot difference or something like that?
But it's not a 4-foot difference.
4 feet difference. So we don't need a seawall from there all the way to there. We only need a seawall.
We don't, is what we're trying to gap capture. But if we're going to go with a seawall or something like this, is to get us slightly back in compliance with our grant and creating that 10-foot walkway. Is the reason we were going to continue that seawall the whole way, is to get it back in the plan.
The blocks, Jack did a preliminary estimate, and he did some preliminary engineering on this, and he's estimating for 1,000 feet, which is about that whole length of the parking area, it's $11,000.
For just the material?
Just for the blocks. So
And then does the port staff put them in place?
We could.
Do we anchor them like we anchor the parking blocks?
Well, Jack, I asked Jack if he figured anchoring in.
Yep.
Right now, Jack says that wall, that 2-foot wall would take a 1-foot wave direct hit. And would be okay. Now, if there's debris and stuff, you might move the wall, but then if they're not anchored, I mean, it would be easy to remove and reset. It's not, I mean, we're talking once a year, too.
Yeah, I mean, a 1-foot wave, that's quite the overtopping over the top of that parking lot. That's,
well, who gave us the original concept on the seawall?
That was Jack.
Jack.
Well, he can go back and look at the water flows he predicted.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he's the one that we have engineering, and he's the one that gave us that, you know, this block that we're talking about will sustain the 1-foot wave that we have here. And I mean, that's, to me, we're accounting for a lot of over, you know, what could possibly happen.
That's the whole point I was talking about. If we go to the end of this and we finally say, okay, and we've got an engineer that will back us up to the full block to prevent what Harbor Sanitation.
Absolutely. Needs. Up to a 1-foot wave. That's what we have for this idea.
Bring it back, yeah.
And so just, yeah, absolutely. Bring it back on Tuesday, please. Direction from the board. But my question about anchoring, are these blocks, I've never got out and physically looked at these blocks. You're talking about the barricade blocks they use on the highways and stuff like
not
that.
Not K-rails. You know with the building that they're doing across the street? They use those concrete blocks to hold back
up.
The,
right.
Exactly.
That
That's the type of block that we're talking about. Not K-rail, but a
right. Okay.
An actual
so
block.
Are they anchorable?
Yeah, you can anchor them.
They have holes to them, like you can
No, you would be self-putting like a 4x6 piece of angle iron with a lag bolt or something. They don't per se come with anchoring holes attached.
But they're interlocking. They're interlocking, so. Horizontally, they'll be anchored, but...
Well, if you anchored every other one, every third one,
if that's what Jack says we need to do, then we do, but...
But if they'll withstand a 1-foot wave without anchoring them, there's no reason in spending the time, the money, the labor, and doing it.
Yeah, I wouldn't anchor them until we found out we had to.
Yeah, because, I mean, that, if we ever want to remove them, we now have 200 holes in our parking lot, and...
I think ultimately... You know, the way I would look at this in the long term, we've already got some ideas about a different kind of seawall that would be much more suitable for the conditions we actually see here. So this would be the short term to get us past the approval of the 9 sites until such time as
we can do something a little better.
And that could be made very clear to Harbor Sanitation is that we need to do this right now so we can get on with the development.
Right.
And our master plan or our strategic business plan calls for this other wall, which is our preferred option, but right now we can't afford it. So in the interim, here's what you're going to get.
Right.
I don't know how you could make it any clearer than that or more simple.
I agree.
That's the direction we're going, and that's the thought process we're moving.
Is money left from that 2011 grant?
No, 2001 grant.
2001.
It was only $80,000 grant.
Yeah, but I think the point is that we are in non-compliance probably in a lot of places with some of the grants that we got.
Well, the major thing that we're finding out we're not in compliance with this grant is the 10-foot walkway.
Right.
That's the major thing that we're not in compliance
with. So within this grant, it also said we were going to maintain all the improvements, and the improvements was the parking asphalt, which, you know, that we're struggling to maintain our asphalt. So. Anyways, I would love to be able to go out there and put a course in.
But us being in compliance, showing that, I think it's going to start helping pave the way. We already have other plans for starting to monitor how much traffic flow actually goes through there. It's going to help us, you know, fight the battle with future grants, future things to help us take care of it. We just can't, you know. That's our main goal, but I think the main thing we have to do, well, if we have to do Harbor Sanitary, we're also going to get back in compliance with the current grant, which is going to help us with applying for future ones and looking at other.
Well, just think it down the road, assuming we actually go with the blocks, I think it's absolutely vital we reach out to the paper.
Absolutely.
We need to talk to you about this, because this is why we're doing this.
Right.
So you know. this isn't something the port dreamed up to make it hard for people to get to the beach and take away your rights and all that stuff. This is what's got to happen.
And Richard, in with that, if we come and we get that 10-foot walkway, where's the car? There'd be no more beach parking.
There is. It's going to be.
There's no beach parking there and we're able to get down that road?
So quickly, I'll go over what the end part of this is going to be. If we decide to go with the blocks, it's going to be moving the 10 feet from the riprap to our
riprap. Okay.
Then it will be another 2 foot of block. And then another cost that we're going to have to do is to curb stop, tire stops across the whole thing. Because the next thing we're going to have is cars hitting a 2 foot concrete block. So we'll have to set all those up. We're going to have to turn and repaint our parking stalls, and it will force the RV park to go back to one way.
Okay. Which, that's what you speak from my own personal view, I like that.
Yeah, and it's going to force it to back to one way, and it'll give the RVs enough room to pull out forward or back up. So the original design, I think, was meant to be able to accept what we're going back to. So it's all out there.
We're out there measuring it. We probably have a 15-foot wide one-lane road, which is plenty. I mean, a typical road is 12 foot.
Well,
so
just look at the Fred Meyer parking lot. I mean, if we can navigate that 98% of the time, that's not so bad.
Yeah. And so this is the idea that we wanted to talk to you guys about. Make sure you guys
start this.
Well, we're going to take some stuff back to the office. We're going to put some stuff together back for you guys on the Tuesday board meeting. We really need to get our plans. We might turn this into Harbor, you know, after you guys approve it. We'll see if Harbor Sanitary will review it as a possible. I don't know if they're going to. It might be put off a little bit longer, but until we get our plans back from Crow Clay. But this on Tuesday, we'll bring you back costs. And
if we don't get, let's say we don't get anything from them, one way or another, they just won't answer us. Then we'll just put it on the drawings and we'll move forward. And then when we get it on the drawings, then we'll have another meeting with them and then we'll find out for sure what they're going to approve or not approve.
So what if we just go put the wall up, like Martha said, and if it's not up to their standards, then they bring their engineer in and tell us.
Absolutely,
you can do it.
We can put the wall up right now if we want to meet the grants.
That's all it would be sufficing,
right?
Would be is getting us back to our grant. If we put up the wall, we'd be in compliance with the grant, but that doesn't mean that Harbor Sanitary is going
to
approve it.
But they would have to bring, like Martha said, their engineers.
What would have to happen is we put the wall up, we file for SDC, or whatever that's called, and we want to develop the nine sites, and they deny us based on we don't like what you've done. That's what we do.
Right, correct. So we can put the wall anytime right now.
We could, but I just think that if they're going to, you know, we pitch them our idea first, and if they say no, then we say, you know, I don't know.
If they say no, what are you going to do then?
Then you see a judge.
You haven't got anything to see the judge for.
Then the board makes the decision, okay, is there still benefit to us for doing this? Does this appear to us to be reasonable to solve their concerns? And if we think so, we go ahead and authorize it.
If they say no, then they should be giving us reasons why they're saying no, and we evaluate whether those are valid concerns or not. And if they're not valid concerns, you know, then you move forward.
Okay, Martha.
That makes sense.
Yes.
Any other questions on it?
This is
our idea. You know, we pondered back and forth K-Rail or Earth Block. I don't think it really matters. We went with the shorter one of the two.
Just for size.
2 feet, just for size.
I think it looked better.
I think we just pick a design that we want stamped on the concrete. It'll be a little bit more money than just solid.
I have some ideas about that, but I'll talk to them offline.
you guys are doing a great job with what you're handed here. So it's very frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, once again, I think you're adapting to the flavor of the day that you're dealing with, and you know, the best you can.
Well, if we put this together and we have it and we turn them in, like we all think, I think here and what we said, I think we got a good enough idea. There shouldn't be a lot of reasons it gets rejected. So I think this is, to us, management looking at it, this is our best course of action given the cards were dealt.
Well, I think for the record, I would say that you, the Port Commission and you guys are doing the best we can do to meet the responsibilities we have to the public to allow beach access, to prevent stormwater damage to the sewer system, and to try and develop our facilities for the benefit of the people that pay the taxes in this port. Mm-hmm. And if there's another public entity that's going to stand in the way of that for no reason, then I would think that's just not okay. But I think this port is moving forward effectively and doing it in a manner that's consistent with your responsibilities and ours.
Absolutely.
We'll put something together and give it to you guys on Tuesday. This was just an information thing to make sure you guys were aware.
Make sure we can't sleep again tonight.
We couldn't sleep Tuesday night.
Yeah, we were.
Okay,
long night.
Moving on. Thanks for hanging around, Travis and Gary. Job's not easy, man. Commissioners, comments. Joe? Ken?
I think we've hashed a lot of subjects.
Richard.
No.
Come on, Richard.
I'm afraid I would comment. I don't want to.
Same thing here, Richard. No comment today, Roy, please. Sharon.
I look forward to Tuesday's meeting to see what they have.
Absolutely. Our next regular meeting date is Tuesday, June 16th, 2020, at 6 p.m. Here?
Yes, yes.
At our regular meeting room.
Regular meeting room and a teleconference.
Okay. That is also. A teleconference number will be available as well.
Yep.
That, number eight, we adjourn this meeting at 4:42, Thursday, June 11th, 2020.
4:21.
4:21.
4:21.
Provide the model of the mold we need to put on every one of those.